Hey there, welcome back for another episode of Talkin' Winter Ops. I'm Rick Nelson, and it seems like there are lots of stories out there about artificial intelligence these days and how it's either going to save the world or destroy civilization as we know it. Now, one thing's for certain, the field of AI is huge, and there are so many different ways it can be used. In fact, if you've got a smartphone with Siri or Alexa, you shop on Amazon, or you have a newer vehicle with adaptive cruise control or lane assist, you're using an AI-driven system right now, and you might not even realize it. The winter maintenance world has an operating environment that's ripe for AI applications that can help take some of the load off of maintenance superintendents and operators out there who make hundreds of complex decisions to successfully fight the storm. On this episode, one we're calling Help is on the Way. We had a great conversation with Tom Brummett, who's a software engineer at the National Center for Atmospheric Research over in their research applications lab. And he's going to be pulling back the curtain on AI and talk about some of the work being done with it in forecasting, road weather, and winter maintenance. So sit back, grab a beverage, and listen in as we talk AI with Tom Brummett right after this. The Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program and Talkin' Winter Ops are here because of the support from AASHTO's Maintenance Committee and state DOTs out there who make a voluntary contribution every year to financially support our TSP. Without the support from those states, we wouldn't be able to provide you with resources to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. So, Tom, you're a software engineer there at NCAR. How long have you been there at NCAR?
I've been at NCAR for about 12 years now, but the first two I interned. So I went to CU Boulder and then started interning here with the same group that I work in now after my sophomore year. So I would have been, summer of 2011. And then after I graduated in 2013, they hired me on. And so I've been here full time for a little bit over 10 years now.
Are you part of the research applications lab, or
yes?
How does that work? What happens at the research applications lab?
That's a great question. So there's my specific group, we kind of focus on working with DOTs, private sector, all sorts of different companies, and kind of pushing the doing research that is, kind of applicable to industry. So a chunk of NCAR is funded through the NSF and other sort of science grants and funds like that. And they're, really focused on cutting edge research and sort of like bleeding edge research. You may have heard that term. And, so from research like that being conducted and proven, then there's a lot more steps to actually, how is this going to impact the public? Like, okay, great. How are we going to be able to use this? So, at the research applications lab, we work a lot in having, let's do some research and let's make a product that people can use right now that, a state DOT can kind of implement and, sort of a kind of back and forth where we've done this research and made this product. What do you think about it? Let's get some feedback. Let's improve it. Let's work in more research where we can, but also more sort of application so that our research is actually, something that can be used by, whoever our client is or by the public or something like that.
Have you always been involved in road weather and winter maintenance, or have you been working on other things besides, in this sandbox, if you will?
Yeah, sure. No, I haven't always been in road maintenance. My work in road maintenance has definitely picked up over the past 5 to 7 years. My initial work when I first came here 10 years ago was focused a lot on renewable energy. So we had contracts with utility providers, and we would produce forecasts for wind power and solar power. And, they would use that for load balancing and, ensuring grid reliability and stuff like that. So I'd say that's where I started at NCAR, was renewable energy. And then we've had our Pike Alert sort of MDSS-like application that has been going on in our group for a while now, and I slowly got pulled more and more into that. And so that's where my first sort of road experience came from, was with our MDSS application. And then, you know, I had machine learning experience from the renewable energy work, so we started sort of applying that into the road weather area. And that's been probably over the past 5 to 7 years.
You know, there's been like tons of things written about artificial intelligence and AI and, you know, how it's either going to save us or it's going to destroy us. You know, it's like one of those two things. My first exposure to AI was in 2001, A Space Odyssey with Hal, right? And Hal kind of got an attitude at the end. And of course, I think that's what people think about when they think about AI. Just what is AI? You know, it's a super big, it's a huge field, right? And it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But from a winter maintenance or a road weather point of view, what should AI mean for us?
That's a great question. And as you said, it's huge. It's such a broad kind of area. You know, I think about like iRobot and Terminator and movies like that.
You're a little younger than me though, Tom.
Exactly. A little bit after the Space Odyssey came out. But you know, I think, you know, sort of it's blown up over the past year, with things like, Google's Bard and ChatGPT. And I think that's kind of, you know, made people say like, oh no, like, I feel like that was almost a step closer to like the sort of iRobot or Space Odyssey envisioning of AI, where it's like, you know, that this computer is thinking for itself and we ask it a question and it answers the question and we don't exactly know how it got that answer, but it seems like a right answer. You know, it's kind of like pushing the decision making that we do internally into a computer, so, you know, so we don't have to think as much. And in terms of road weather, I think the sort of iRobot fantasy of AI is that it's going to do everything for us, you know, and we'll just have a question and we can ask AI and it'll give us an answer. But that's not anywhere near occurring in my generation and my grandchildren's generation. You know, I think at this phase, it's more another sort of piece of the puzzle. You know, I think data is becoming huge everywhere. Everyone's collecting data. Your data is valuable. Everyone's selling data. And so AI allows us to make sense of all that data. I think that's where it's going to be most applicable in the road weather, is rather than having 20 to 50 different data feeds, you can use some artificial intelligence or machine learning or something to try to distill all those inputs you have down to something that's, you know, more meaningful, that's going to impact the decisions you have to make right now. So I think it's sort of a sort of data distillation type thing, where you give it a whole bunch of stuff and then rather than having to think A and B and C and D and E, you can look at maybe 3 or 4 different inputs that AI might be able to provide that will simplify the task you're trying to complete, I'd say.
So it's like a really sophisticated computer program, really, right?
Yeah.
Maybe data mining or...
Yeah, no, that's what I'd say. You know, a lot of our work with AI lately has been on friction or grip. I think grip is the better term to use for it. And, you know, friction or road surface friction grip will have a big impact on, you know, driver's safety and plowing and stuff like that. And there's a lot of things that go into what your road grip is going to be, you know, the road temperature, the atmospheric temperature, dew point, if there's rain, if there's snow, if there's leftover ice, if there's morning dew, all this sort of stuff kind of goes into what the grip is going to be. And so you can train a model on all these other inputs, and then that model can output, you know, your grip value. And so you will only have to look at grip rather than trying to look at everything else that may make up what the grip would be.
Yeah, I remember when we first got started with the
the ARWIS projects. And we did some thermal mapping. You know, we went out and we collected, well, we didn't do it, but, you know, the vendor did, and created these thermal profiles for different segments of road. And you know, at that point, I was thinking, boy, there's just so many variables that go into creating that pavement temperature. You know, how could you ever model it, right? Of course, that was back when we were just first getting, you know, PCs on our desk, you know, and I think the computing horsepower we have these days has opened up a lot of different avenues.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would 100% agree with you. And I think that has also really enabled AI is that, you know, with it, it's super cheap to store data. It's super cheap to collect data. We're making powerful and faster computers and processors. And so, you know, we have all this power in the computers, and you know, AI is just a way to leverage all that. You know, it kind of makes it a little easier to, hey, we have all this data and we have all this processing, and AI lets us, you know, kind of get something useful out of all of that.
The so I guess when you think about AI as this big computer program, right, I think the same old adage still holds true, right? Garbage in is garbage out.
Oh yeah. Yep. 100%. And yeah, even more with some of these products. And I think, you know, one of the, not drawbacks, but something that, you know, kind of discourages people from maybe adopting AI techniques is that it's hard to explain what they're doing all the time. You know, if you give it these four inputs and it gives you something, It's hard for you to have, you know, a trust in what it gives you if you can't see how it's getting that. And I think that garbage in, garbage out notion is huge for AI, because if you give it four inputs and it gives you something out, you know, those four inputs better be good, and the data that the model was trained on better be good, or what it gives you is going to be garbage. And I think that really, you know, hinders adaptability of some of these AI techniques if your model is giving you garbage. You know, you're not going to use it, and that effort is sort of a waste. So I think that is something that needs to be considered with AI. And, you know, we have all this data, but you can't always trust data. Even well-tuned sensors will give you, you know, good reports a lot of the times, but if you have a few bad apples in there, it's going to screw things up a lot. And you know, one of our I think across winter maintenance operations and AI in general, a big sort of field right now is image recognition, and the garbage in, garbage out notion applies specifically in image recognition. You know, you need to have an image of the road, and you need to have a label, whether it's snow covered or lightly snow covered or wet. And you know, even in our group, sometimes people don't always agree on what that image is. And in automated systems, sometimes you don't have the luxury of labeling 10,000 images yourself. You may need to do some code or some other shortcut to try to label all these images. And if you get an image that is, you know, half complete, like maybe the image was uploaded to the server before it was finished downloading, and it's not a full image, or it's black, or there's glare in it, or headlights from a car are obstructing the image, you know, that all is gonna have a big impact on your models that will train on that. And yeah, it's gonna give you garbage. So that's one of the biggest maybe uses of time when we're making AI models, is we'll budget maybe 60-70% of our effort in just making a clean, reliable data set that you can train on. And then, you know, if we spend 60-70% of the time making the data set, we'll spend 15-20% of the time actually working on the AI model. And then the other 15-10% of the time is all on verification. So at this phase in the industry, often training your model is not the easiest part, but one of the easier pieces in setting up a artificial intelligence forecasting system or image recognition or something like that.
Yeah, it's almost like it still has to pass the smell test, right? You know, it's like whatever comes out the tailpipe, it's got to be reasonable, right? It's got to seem It's got, yeah. And so somebody with some expertise someplace down the line has got to take a look at that and say, yeah, that passes the test, right? You know, I would expect it to look like that.
Yes.
But I think so, at some point in time, we're going to lose that experience and we're just going to have to trust these systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tom, you talked about image recognition a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about some of the applications that might be out there. You know, when I first started sort of getting interested in this whole AI thing, it was kind of like, well, you know, how pervasive is it really? And then, you know, I started doing a little research and it's like, gee whiz, the search engines that you use, you know, in your browser, they're AI driven. You know, Siri is, Alexa is, your Tesla is, you know, there's a lot of systems out there. They've just, you know, become ingrained, yeah. Sort of in our everyday life. And now I hear that Walmart's going to help you shop using some AI kinds of routines. I don't know how that's going to work out, but anyway, what are some applications? What are some AI kind of applications that are happening out there in forecasting or road weather or winter maintenance that folks might be interested in sort of keeping an eye on to help them do their job?
Sure. So, you know, I can speak about what we're kind of pursuing as far as image recognition goes. You know, we've done some work to come up with road surface condition labels from images on, you know, interstates and highways from Wyoming up to Oregon. And that right now is used, I would say, to help the tactical time, the now time. It's useful to say, like, hey, the temperature's dropped and our sensors are saying this precip and, you know, this, you know, whatever. But to also have, like, hey, here's a picture. Our image recognition is saying that it's snowing right now from the picture. You look at that and you're like, okay, great. Like, I know it's snowing, so I'm going to take these actions as far as plowing goes. And I think it's, one, a confidence builder. You know, people are visual. And so actually seeing the reality of what it looks out in the field, I think carries a lot more weight than seeing numbers for, you know, air temperature, mm-hmm. dew point, all that stuff. So I think that is one area. There's other pieces of it where, you know, you can use recognition to maybe get a sense for visibility and fog and some other things like that that are a little bit harder for, say, ARWA stations to pick up on. We're also using image recognition to try to assist with variable speed limit signs. So, you know, many states have variable speed limit markers along highways and stuff to, you know, tell drivers that, hey, I know this road is usually 65, but there's winter weather right now, and so you can only safely go 55 or 45. And often those VSL signs are sort of reactive to traffic. So the VSL signs and traffic operators will see that, hey, the average speed on this section of highway has dropped from 75 to 65. Let's lower our VSL sign in response to that to, you know, try to maintain safety. And I think we can use image recognition to be more proactive rather than sort of reactive. And, you know, you can quickly see, okay, images are taken every 10 minutes. That means if a storm comes in within 5 or 10 minutes, you're going to have your image recognition trigger. It's going to say, hey, there's snow now. And that's going to be information that you may get sooner than the information you get from vehicle speeds and stuff like that. So you may be able to tell drivers to lower their speeds ahead of an event, or, you know, it'll just help you kind of react faster to what's going on in the environment, I would say.
So the image recognition of road conditions, how does that fit in operationally? What's a scenario where you could use image recognition for road conditions to make tactical decisions, for example?
Sure. So, you know, I'll give an example from what we're doing with one of our states is we, you know, we're ingesting their camera images across a big section of I-80. We probably have 20 no, probably like 30 to 40 different sites, and I'll have camera images. And at five of those right now, we're starting simple. We've kind of just developed the system in the last year or so. And at five of those images, we're saying if the pavement is dry, wet, slick in spots. We have a few classifications for, you know, how impacted the pavement is. And I think that, you know, like I said before, it gives the maintenance operators a quicker quicker response to, hey, snow's here. We see it in the image. It's labeled this. We need to plow. And then it can give you more information for, you know, how severe the storm is. I think it does a good job of, you know, onset of storm and then response to a storm. Again, with image recognition, you can sort of maybe see something coming, so you can, I think react to it faster and sort of plan ahead a little bit more, rather than if you were just waiting for an observation of heavy snow, you know, you might be able to see it faster with image recognition. So most of our image recognition is from stationary ARWIS cameras, and there's a lot of work on mobile image recognition for either cameras that are attached to plows or just from any trucks on the road. And I think it's a whole different problem, but there's a whole lot more interesting solutions to it. And I don't remember what team it was that was investigating this, but there was a project where a group had used image recognition to help plow drivers keep their truck centered in the lane, even when there was, cool, you know, a really heavy snow event and maybe the lane lines are starting to disappear. This team had used image recognition along with a little visual device on the truck's dashboard that would help them, you know, stay centered in the area that they were expected to plow. So I think that was a really interesting application of it.
Well, okay, so two questions. AI and forecasting. How does AI help forecasting road weather?
Sure. You know, often, and I'm sure as most winter maintenance operators and traffic coordinators know, you can get a sort of MDSS-like forecast from a various number of, you know, weather models or private companies. And so you may have seven or eight different forecast, and AI can be used to sort of blend those all together into, you know, one product that is likely to outperform the rest of the inputs. We've done a handful of tests with that, not only in winter weather, but in solar energy forecasting, where we'll ingest 5 to 6 different like irradiance forecasts into a model, and then that model will give you, you know, a single forecast that is often more reliable and better than all the 5 different inputs. So I think that same approach can be applied to the road weather area, where, you know, if you have road temperature from one model and air temperature from a different model and maybe surface condition from a different model, you could plug all those into an artificial intelligence model that would be able to give you maybe one or two classifications that would probably be more useful to you than all those sort of, not raw, but all those sort of input models, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. How is that different than the ensemble forecasting? I know when y'all were building the initial MDSS system, they were talking something very similar to that. They, you know, this one model predicts cloud cover much better than the others, and this one does air temperature better than the others. And so they were picking and pulling pieces to pull it together. Is that like a precursor to AI?
I think so. I think it's, you know, it's the same idea. It's just sort of another approach. You know, I think ensembles have the benefit that they're a little bit more explainable, and there's usually like some underlying physics in there that you can use to be like, hey, I'm getting this output, why am I getting this? And you can kind of trace it through your ensemble and figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I think artificial intelligence is just another way to do that. You know, we often will have an AI model and an ensemble, and comparing the two against each other is usually a really interesting sort of research, because sometimes the ensembles do better, sometimes AIs do better. If you're looking at bulk statistics versus specific cases, they can behave differently. But, you know, I think it's sort of you know, two different approaches at the same thing. And, you know, like you said, I think ensembles are sort of a precursor to AI. And the benefit of AI is that, you know, the entry point is pretty easy and low. I think, you know, anyone without knowing a lot of info about how the models run, you know, underlying physics, all that stuff, can kind of take 5 or 6 different inputs, plug them into a linear regression or some sort of AI model and get an output. Whereas, you know, mm-hmm. to kind of produce your own ensemble, you need a, you know, more thorough understanding of the physics and, you know, thermodynamics maybe. And, you know, sort of you need to know more about, you know, the field that you're investigating. Whereas AI, you can be a little more blunt about it and just expect the model to sort of work out all those relationships rather than you having to research them and learn them and code them up yourself.
Tom, one of the things you talked about was this idea of machine learning. And there's also this field of deep learning out there. What is that all about? What is this whole machine learning, deep learning thing?
Sure.
Does that tie back to this whole making sure you got a good data set so that it knows what it's working on?
Or, yeah.
I mean, it's like you got to show it something the first time before you turn it loose.
Exactly.
Right?
So, with machine learning and with deep learning, with any AI technique, obviously you want a clean and reliable data set to work with. I think the notion of deep learning is, you know, with machine learning, your performance increases as your data set increases, and then you get to a point where you increase your data set more and more, but the model's already learned the relationships that it's going to apply. And so increasing your data set doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to increase your performance. And okay. Where deep learning comes in is that does a whole lot more work than a lot of sort of basic AI and machine learning methods do. And something like a convolutional neural network will continue to improve its performance as you increase the data set. So where a general sort of machine learning linear regression model would fall off, a deep learning model is going to continue to learn and going to continue to improve with more data set. And those have kind of gone more adopted over the past few years because, again, our computers are getting faster. People have better access to supercomputers and better access to large data sets. So, you know, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, it was hard to use deep learning because you didn't have the processing power you needed or you didn't have the amount of data you needed. But now, as storage is cheap, processing is often cheap, you have cloud solutions to handle a lot of that stuff. It's the entry point for doing deep learning models has lowered, I think, and they're easier to run. There's a lot of research in understanding them. And so, whereas with some machine learning model techniques, it's hard to figure out, you know, why did I get this prediction? Often with a CNN or some deep learning model, if you know what you're doing, and this takes, you know, a lot of experience, but you can kind of trace it back and unravel the net a little bit to figure mm-hmm. out why I'm getting this answer. So ultimately, deep learning just lets you take better advantage of larger data sets and more intense processing power. And depending on your application, they might not be worth it. You know, if you spend this much more effort, you may not get an equal improvement. But for image recognition, you know, I think that's a huge area for deep learning because just image recognition can get, you know, the problems can get really tricky depending on what you're trying to do.
Yeah, we did an episode years ago about big data. It was like, so you got big data, so what? I guess now is the so what, right? This whole AI field is the so what with respect to big data.
Yeah, exactly. I think exactly. And as I said earlier, and I'll reiterate the point, I think AI gives more people access to the data, and you don't need an expert in that field to go in and, you know, pore over the data. You can get someone with just a little bit of AI experience to start plugging and playing with things, and they could start to make sense of it pretty quick, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Tom, put on your iRobot t-shirt and tell me, what does the future hold? what's coming down the pipe with this? What are some things that maybe we should keep our eyes peeled for?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
No holds barred, right?
Sure. I think step one is increasing adoptability of some of these AI techniques, you know, getting them used more by, you know, maintenance coordinators and traffic operators, and, you know, having, you know, some sort of AI models in there that are either predicting a road condition or a grip state, or, you know, doing some of this image recognition and getting people to trust them more and starting to rely on that more. And, you know, it's hard to think, you know, 20 years down the road, you know, at this stage, I would say, you know, AI is just another piece of the puzzle. You know, it's just another tool in your pocket to use to make some decision. Ultimately, in the future, you know, it'd be great if there was something like ChatGPT, where you could be like, hey, what do I need to plow today? How much chemical do I need to apply? Where do I need to do this? So, you know, I mean, that is kind of like the ultimate goal, would be to have a one-stop shop for sort of maintenance decision making. But, you know, I think we've got a lot of bridges to cross to get there. You know, increasing people's confidence in the models, being able to explain your model, you know, assuming you get to this great future where you have a model that's coordinating, say, your plow drivers, you have to be able to trust that model. And if that model screws up and it sends you out plowing on a 70-degree day when there's nothing going on, you want to be able to figure out, like, why is it doing this, and stop it from doing that the next time. You know, I think, if I'm remembering right, in the iRobot movie, the robot started acting in a way that people couldn't explain, you know, and that is sort of the scary part, when your model starts doing things that maybe doesn't make sense and that you don't understand. And that is really going to kind of, take your adoptability of AI back a long ways if you're not trusting the model, and if you think it's giving you garbage. So, you know, I
keep one hand on the power cord,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. As far out as I can predict, you're going to need a human in the loop overseeing whatever AI model you have. And, you know, you got to have a person that is sort of being like, yes, we can trust this. No, we can't trust this.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about opportunities for, like, dynamic routing. You know, it's like, instead of ChatGPT, it might be, you know, Winter GPT or something like that. And then it becomes sort of a make sure the truck is in the right place at the right time. You know, the rest is sort of taken care of in the background. You know, maybe that's the holy grail. I remember years ago, friction or grip seemed to be the holy grail. If we only knew what the slipperiness of the road was, we would know what chemical, when to put it down, and that sort of thing. And it looks like maybe we're at or crossing that horizon, you know, where it's like we've got a better understanding of what's happening out there in that road environment. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that next element, that next piece is, you know, in a futuristic world, put the truck with these resources at the right place at the right time. And, you know, you don't have to have this 40-year seasoned veteran saying, you know, 20 or, you know, 120 pounds per lane mile, and, you know, deploy your wings and things like that. You know, it seems with the workforce issues that we've got facing, we need some of these force multipliers, if you will, to sort of help, not necessarily with automated systems, but operator assist kinds of systems.
Yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, if we're talking about strictly, say, like the United States, even a one-stop shop for sort of what you're talking about, we need this plow driver in this area with this chemical, is really tricky, because what works in one area doesn't work well in the other area. And, you know, you said, you know, right now you kind of need the veteran on the force with 40 years experience. And I think that is still going to be really valuable, even in maybe heavily AI adopted future, where, you know, you have a big data set problem, but what works in Maine is not necessarily going to be what works in Wyoming. And, your model may not know that exactly. And so it's really useful to mm-hmm. have those people in the field or those people coordinating operations that knows like, hey, X means this in this area, but it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing in this other area. You know, so I think the more we start to look into AI, and you know, we've done a lot of projects on grip and friction, and the more we look into it, we make progress, but it also, you know, highlights a lot of things that we don't know. You know, it brings up like, hey, our model's doing great here. Why isn't it doing so good in this spot? And you start investigating it, and you know, maybe your model does really great at measuring the grip on a road under wet conditions. But all of a sudden, if there's a sheet of black ice on it, or if there's morning dew or something, it might fall off. So, you know, I think grip is, it's really kind of fickle. You know, a grip value of X doesn't necessarily always translate to a certain weather condition, you know? So it's kind of nice mm-hmm. that it's on this sort of linear slick to dry scale, sort of like a 0 to 1, like how bad is it sort of thing. But it's really not that simple. You know, a grip value of X doesn't always mean the same thing in the field. And so that's when yeah. I say, you know, it's kind of only, it's one piece of the sort of maintenance puzzle. It's not a full blown answer yet.
Yeah. Yeah. This environment that we operate in is definitely complex.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an understatement for sure.
So you mentioned a couple of projects that you're working on. There's an Aurora project, and that's the variable speed limit
mm-hmm.
project,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Where are you all with that project? Is it like middle in or close to the end?
No.
Or results are promising?
Sure. We're very early stages of that right now. So we're kind of in a data collecting phase. We're reaching out to state DOTs to get more information about how they use variable speed limit signs. We're connecting with states to figure out what data we can get as far as camera images go for the image recognition piece. We're trying to get all of this ARWIS data, and then we're trying to get speed volume occupancy data, hoping to sort of tie it all together so that we can use some AI models that will ingest, you know, your atmospheric conditions from the ARWIS sensors, the traffic conditions from your speed volume occupancy data. What's the image recognition saying? So right now we're just kind of in the data collecting and planning phase of the whole thing. And so, you know, it's an exciting project, but we're not to the point where we're, you know, even training or verifying models yet, I'd say. Mm-hmm.
Like you say, it takes so much energy of the project at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Building that data set that we can trust. And yeah, that we're still in that phase, and that's going to take some time.
Yeah. So, you know, we kind of hinted around this whole idea of maintenance decision support systems, right? A Pike Alert. Mm. It's like you're the lead for Pike Alert now. Is that right?
I'm leading the engineering efforts. Yeah. So, okay. Gary Wiener was, you know, he kind of grandfathered that project for many years, I think since before I was at NCAR, and he's recently retired. So Jim Cowie is inheriting Pike Alert plus a whole lot of other Gary's projects. So he's still, I would say, the lead on it. And then mm-hmm. I'm leading up engineering efforts for it right now, which I'm really enjoying. I think our Pike Alert project is super interesting. We're working with 5 or 6 different states, and I love working with all the DOTs, and it's a good excuse for us to, you know, play with some image recognition and modeling and grip modeling. And, you know, I think it's a great sort of sandbox to try out some of these AI techniques.
Anything interesting new on the Pike Alert front? You know, you talk about image recognition and some modeling stuff.
Image recognition is sort of the front of what we're doing there. I'm hoping to get to a place where we can start incorporating some of these friction models we've been working on. You know, I think it'd be great if we could start providing friction forecast and maybe a friction sort of analysis at ARWIS sensors that may not have a friction sensor attached to it. So you know, we can use the other data available at that ROS to give us a, you know, sort of pseudo grip measurement. So that's something that I think we're trying to investigate. And then the image recognition is something that we've just gone onto it in the past less than a year. And so we're still sort of verifying that piece. As I said before, we're starting small. We want to do it at a small enough sample set that we can verify everything. And, you know, with something like grip, or even if you think about like air temperature, a lot of these other atmospheric variables, it's easy to verify because you have a history of observations and you have a history of your predictions and you can run statistics on that and figure out how well you're doing. But with something like image recognition, you know, you really have to look image by image, and it takes a lot of time to, you know, manually go through and see how you're doing. So, that's what we're doing now. We're trying to increase our confidence in these models, figure out where their downfall is, figure out how to improve them. And then in the future, we're hoping to incorporate that label or whatever our classification from the image model back into our MDSS system and alerting, you know. So right now we're just saying, hey, this image is dry or it's wet. But in the future, we'd like to, you know, take that image output, dry, wet, feed it back into our forecast system, use it for forward error correction, use it for possibly training, to just, you know, have that as another sort of predictor piece into our MDSS system.
Yeah, cool. Really cool. Tom, anything else you want to add on this topic? Did we hit all of the areas with respect to AI and winter maintenance that you can think of out there?
I think we covered it pretty well. You know, I think there's a lot of exciting things going on. And, you know, again, I think, you know, one of maybe the roadblocks is increasing consumer confidence in models. And to do that, I think there's a lot of work where, you know, there's sort of a black box term that goes along with AI, whereas you feed a whole bunch of predictors into your AI, i.e. the black box, and it gives you an output. And so there's a lot of great research that people are doing where they're trying to sort of unravel that black box to, you know, show you why the model is giving you this prediction. And I think that is critical to increasing consumers' confidence and encouraging adoptability of these models. You know, people have to be able to understand why a model is giving them something. So the model has to be good, and people have to have some sort of faith in the model. I think that's still a big area.
Well, and I think the proof of the pudding is going to be in the eating, right? Yeah. It's like you've got to give it a go. You know, it's you know, just like any new superintendent that you put out there on the road. Mm-hmm. Sometimes their decisions are going to be really good, and sometimes, you know, you're gonna have a bump in the road, and you've got to sort of double back and figure out why that happened so it doesn't happen again.
Yep.
You know, it's the same thing with these systems, I think.
Yep, exactly.
Tom, you guys have got a great website there at NCAR at the Research Applications Lab. It's got some good discussion about AI and the die-cast system, which I think is a forecasting thing that you all have developed there. And I'll put a link to that website down in the show notes. So if folks want to go and explore a little bit more about what y'all are doing in this realm, they've got a resource to pull on.
Great.
And if it's okay with you, I'll throw your email address out there as well. And if folks have a curiosity or an interest or a question, the invitation to reach out to you, if that's okay.
Yeah. No, of course. I definitely encourage that.
Well, Tom, thanks for taking time out of your day today to visit with us about AI. And I know I got a much clearer understanding about what it's all about. And hopefully the folks that were listening in will too. And hopefully it'll engage their imagination a little bit, and, you know, as to what maybe some future applications might be.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Thanks for having me, Rick.
So if you like this episode, share it with your colleagues. And while you're at it, click subscribe on your favorite podcast app. You can sign up to get all the Talkin' Winter Ops news directly to your inbox by subscribing at subscribe.talkinwinterops.org. Sign up today and you'll get all the news firsthand. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at TalkinWO. This podcast is possible because there are state departments of transportation across the nation that make a voluntary contribution to support the AASHTO Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program, formerly known as PSYCOP. It's because of their support that Talkin' Winter Ops and all the other resources we provide are there to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. Until next time, thanks for tuning in and stay safe out there.